Rabbi Dr. Moshe David Tendler
has taught generations of students at YU. As a professor of Jewish medical ethics, as a professor of biology, and most of all, as a Rosh Yeshiva. All that while serving as the rabbi of a very large and vibrant synagogue, the community center of Mansi. He is a prolific writer and a speaker on many contemporary Jewish topics. I am pleased to present Rabbi Dr. Moshe David Tendler.
I don't think I need to identify myself in my involvement with Yeshiva University. Baruch Hashem, began saying a shiur in the high school in 1949. And except for one sabbatical, Yeshiva obviously mixed up Shemitah with Yovel. And I had one sabbatical in all this time. Baruch Hashem, I've been in the Yeshiva teaching regular courses, the shiur primarily, and in the college. But this evening is a special, special evening because of the guests of honor and the recognition. The guests of honor, the Schreiber Mishpoche, they are founders of my shul in Muncie. Judy Schreiber is the daughter of maybe my oldest, closest friend, Rabbi Amos Bunim. And special recognition being given to Alvin Blumenfeld, Zichron Levocha. Alvin Blumenfeld was my Talmid in the high school, followed me to Muncie, and was president of my shul for many, many years. It's a special schus to be able to share this evening with you. What I did was gave you a handout that pretty well says who we are. The Rambam in Hilchos Sodei Torah, in commenting on the mitzvah of Ahavas Hashem, V'ahavtas Hashem Elokecha, points out that there's no way to fill that mitzvah, love God, it doesn't mean anything. It's words without meaning. And therefore he asked the question in Perek Sheni of Yisodei HaTorah, I didn't give you that reference, Hechi haderech la'avoso v'yiroso? How can you learn to love God and be in awe of Him? When you study God in nature, study God in all the great things that Kadosh Baruch Hu has made in this world, you are in awe of God, and awe, yiro, leads to avo, leads to love of God. What I did for you for this evening, recognizing that we have, Baruch Hashem, an audience that differ in their intellectual level, but not in their love of God, not in their love of Torah, not in their appreciation for our yeshiva. I gave you what is basically on the interface of halacha and science, halacha and the study of nature. The Rambam in Pirush Mishnayos that I gave you by recommendation of my ophthalmologist, who asked me to recommend his name to you. The Rambam says that there are three approaches when you see something in the Agoda, the language of Chazal, that seems to be strange. He says there are three groups of people. Katan Shono, the first group, says whatever the Chachamim say is 100% true. It sounds strange to you. It sounds irrational to you. That's what it is. Says these people, he says, instead of fulfilling the goal that Kodesh Baruch Hu set for us, the Omru Rakam Chochom V'Novon Hagoy Hagodol Hazeh, we are a wise people. Instead, people say, Rakam koton v'sochol hagoy hazeh. What a stupid people they are. because they don't understand that Chachamim speak Beloshon Chido, they speak a riddle, they speak Moshal, simile. You can't take everything they say literally. Then there's the other group who say, well, whatever Chachamim say, that was from years back, don't have to listen to it. They are apokosim. They're evil people. And he says there's a third group. He says, I can't even call them a group. Katschlich, he says, there aren't enough of them to call them a group, who know when you take something literally and when you take something figuratively. He says, find one of them and study with them, and they'll teach you what the Chachamim say. That's the course of study at yeshiva. I quote there, you turn the pages, but I'll have to talk a little faster than the pages because of the time allotment. There's a beautiful quote there, Hamrabo Mishklov, in page number 2, the Talmud Muvok of the Vilna Gaon, which is something that can't be said out loud in the current yeshiva climate that exists in so many parts of our world. He's quoting, the Baruch Mishklov is quoting the Vilna Gaon, and says as follows in the last paragraph, "Fima sheyechsa la'odom yidius mishari ha'chachmos." Whatever you're missing in the other wisdoms, then you should know, "Luma zeh yuchsor lo meyer yodos b'chachmas ha'Torah." If you don't know the other wisdoms, we'll talk about in a minute, then a hundredfold more you won't know any Torah. What are these other wisdoms? On page 3, the top of the page, Elmu Pnei HaMenorah Yeiru Shiva Saneiros. Kadosh Baruch Hu asks to make a candelabra, a menorah, that consists of 7 arms. And the Hamikdavo, at the bottom of the page, points out that according to Greek epistemology, there all of human knowledge is divided into 7 curricula. And these 7 curricula, he says, one of them is Torah. And there he says, "Mishum she Torah b'shabal peh nichlal sheva chachmos shebili yidir b'chol ha-chachmos yevshel lovo l'kavona ikori ikri ha-Torah." Without knowing the other 6 wisdoms, you can't know Torah either. Basically, a paraphrasing of what the Gaon has said. What it means is this: the Torah was given to us in our world. Our world consists of knowledge concerning biology, concerning chemistry, concerning sociology, concerning, as we heard just before, secular law. That's part of our environment and how Torah law fits in with it. Unless you can go ahead and make this symbiosis between the 6 chokhmos, the Torah says, El mul pnei ha-menorah, when the Kohen of the Yisrael lit the candles, he made sure that the wicks all pointed towards the center, for the center candle, the center wick represented Torah. The 6 knowledge gives us knowledge, and the 7th one, Torah, makes that knowledge fit for human society. Move to a Gemara in Nido. Last year I said Shir in Nido, this year in Shabbos I try to share a thought in either one, and some of the information that I will give you came from the students who used another Rosh Yeshiva called Rabbi Google, right? And I said something in Shir, and somebody called up Rabbi Google, right? Immediately presented the scientific evidence for it. Rabbi Zeira said, "I no longer answer certain questions concerning family law, laws of family purity, concerning identification of blood stains." Why, he said, and I have give you there the English translation there, "If I don't know the science of Bovel, how can I comment on the Torah?" Look at that wonderful expression, right? That's that'll be on page number, Mark 7 on the right-hand corner on the bottom. Tiva de Bovil Gomeli de lo Chazoi Domo. The advancing science of Bovil made me give up answering Shilas concerning the Shila concerning menstrual blood. Why? Because I said to myself, B'tiva lo yadayna, I'm not acquainted with the natural science of things. How can I answer the halacha? That attitude is what kept our halacha alive, made our halacha relevant to our lives. Let me give you then on the next page. You have a question that challenges our emunas chazal. An example of what we said, do you take something literally or not? We know that in building the Beis HaMikdash, there were two areas where you could not use metal in order to cut something down to size. The Mizbeach and the stones on the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol. There the names had to be inscribed somehow without the use of metal tools. Any place else, if you heard a story about Shlomo HaMelech catching Ashvedai so that he could cut the stones of the Beis HaMikdash, it doesn't refer to the stones of the Beis HaMikdash. Stones of the Beis HaMikdash were cut with metal, with chisels on a higher mountain and rolled down. We even have nowadays the logs on which these stones were rolled down. But how do you do such a thing? How do you go ahead and inscribe the names of the 12 tribes without using some kind of instrument which would have to be metal? Maybe nowadays a laser beam may substitute if that would be an approach. A laser beam starts off with a metal instrument, I don't know. Nevertheless, possibly. Still, there was a little animal. And the little animal, if you outline where he should go, he goes there and he eats the stone. Is that possible? So I now speak from personal experience. I was out with the team in the Negev. Negev is a dry area of Eretz Yisrael. And by day you see nothing in the Negev. It's a desert kind of ecology. At night, the floor is filled with snails. These snails have only one food supply, lichens, L-I-C-H-E-N-S. That's a strange plant, a mixture of a mold and an algae that can grow on the bare rock. They bear the bare rock in the cracks of the rock. And these snails come out. It's the only food they can eat. These little kinds of moss-like growth. And they chisel out in the rock with their teeth, 2 millimeter deep. Every rock in that area has a filigree, and no one assumed it was due to anything more than sandblast, the wind-driven sand. It's not due to sand. It's due to these little snails, a picture which I gave you, right? And we asked the question, could this be Tolaz be the Shomir? I don't know if it is, but don't grin, don't smirk when you hear something that Achachomen tell us. What it says is, sure it's possible. Is this one or another kind? We need to reinforce our emunas chazal. Many times the chacham speak bechido and riddle. They speak not literally, but when they do speak literally, they mean it. The next one is a critical example, right? Rav Nachman, wife, who obviously was also a Talmida Chachoma, made a statement. My father-in-law Zatzal would speak in our shul very often. No matter what he said, he always ended up with the same statement. Whenever you say, Et Shvel Tzazayin Ayid, that Judaism makes it difficult. You undermine Judaism. Goes to Shvel to Zayin Ayid. I don't want to do things that are Shvel for my children. That the Alter said, you think God deprived us of anything? Whatever God said is forbidden. You're not missing anything, because there's a counterpart that's perfectly kosher. You don't like blood? Want to taste blood? Eat liver. Liver tastes like blood. And said, but I want a piece of chaza. How do you taste chaza? So the wife, Yalta, the wife of Rachman, said, no problem, there's a fish. Shibuta tastes just like chaza. Yeah or no? So now you can go to a restaurant in New York and you buy a fish called tambuki. And I underlined it for you. What's the yichus of this fish tambuki? It tastes more like pork than fish. It has beautiful scales. I've personally eaten that fish. It's a wonderful fish from the Amazon. Right? Yalta didn't make a statement, mystical statement. She said, I know from my knowledge of biology, there are such species around. The next page I only brought in because my name is mentioned and because Yudin's name is also mentioned, but to show why to Paskana Shaile you need more information than is usually available. Some of you may remember Professor Berger, Zecher Levracha, who was killed in an automobile accident right near Muncie, and the coroner insisted upon an autopsy. That was the first time I presented to the coroner the possibility of using a CAT scan to determine the cause of death. He agreed, and that made it easy for the second case, which I referred to here. Well, again, a young man, perfectly healthy, died on a train coming back to home in New Jersey, and there's no cause of death. He must do an autopsy by law. I was able to convince the coroner to try a CAT scan. MRI wasn't invented then. And sure enough, the CAT scan was able to determine the cause of death and avoid the need to do an autopsy, which is considered to be a desecration of the dead. And there you have, next one is one of my favorite ones. There's a gastroenterologist in Boston who went, he's an art lover, went around the world seeing artwork. He noticed something strange. Whenever people are depicted as eating, they're always eating on the left side. In those days, people reclined while eating. I said to myself, aha, now I know why the Chachamim said that for the Seder, you must lean on your left side. It turns out by leaning on the left side, it avoids people who suffer from regurgitation, from GERD, and also you can eat more when you lean on your left side. And therefore, Chachamim, in giving imagery of what a rich man does on a Seder night, he eats like a rich man, right? Well, rich men eat while leaning on the left side, because then they can eat more. And I gave you the references over there. Then a fabulous reference from the Gemara in Gittin that we said a number of years ago, where Rav Shreiroi Goen, I'll translate it for you. And I have it underlined what comes out as page 16 there, but it's another page on the bottom. Rav Shreiroi Goen and commenting on the number of times that the Talmud records medical care for various illnesses. And I gave you, it didn't come out too well on the reproduction for some reason, for suffering from blood in the head, right? Then you bring boxwood, willow, etc. You cook it, you cook it, and you smear it on your head, etc. Comes Rav Shreiroi Goen, one of the greatest goanim we have, and said, Ananamei Meluchun Rabbonon Lava Susi Inun. Let me tell you this. Rabbis are not doctors. If you have an illness, don't go to a rabbi. Go to a doctor. And go to a doctor who gives you empiric proof that his treatment is proper. Who says such a thing? It's clear we have concepts of ex cathedra. There are things which Chachamim have in our Masores, handed down. Kadosh Baruch Hu gave a Torah to Moshe, Masorah to Yeshua, Yeshua to Kenim. That's our Torah. Medical information was provided by Hippocrates and Galen, not by Moshe Rabbeinu. and therefore we're not bound to accept the teachings of Galen and Hippocrates. Therefore, when you have an illness, the illness has treatment, but treatment has changed. You can't trust a rabbi telling you, I found it in the Gemara. That's not a reason to use a treatment. Better check with a doctor, he says. And this was written not by a member of the conservative movement. This is written by the one who is the basic source down in the transmission of Torah to our generation. And here we have it. So to present you with a problem, here we have one of the great problems on the science halacha interface. That's the Gemara in Chulin, the Mishnah in Chulin, there on page 16 on the right and lower right hand corner. A mouse that is half earth and half flesh. Remember, our Chachamim were taught by Galen and Hippocrates that there is such a thing as a mouse coming from the earth. Some years ago, if you ask your grandmother, now maybe great-grandmother, that is it true that mice come, if you leave old clothes in the closet, then mice will come from it. Yeah, it has some notion that the mice come from it. And of course, it's true, because you find that mice hibernate, they go into there, they make a nest in there, etc. Well, they have this concept of a mouse that's half earth, meaning spontaneous generation. Not that life begets life, but earth has a vital force, can make life. And we have halachas from that concerning certain insects, killing insects on Shabbos. We believe that certain insects were not produced by sexual reproduction, but came from minazeya, came from the sweat, etc. That was a common belief until Redi and Pasteur disproved it in the 1700s. Well, the Gemara has it. The Gemara says there's a mouse that chotzi adoma and chotzi boso, half meat, half flesh, half earth, half mud. So the Rambam comments, that's what I have marked off to you. That's the Rambam on the lower half of the page. He says, Husipu mepulsum, a mouse, mixoso boso, mixoso tit, half mud, half blessed. Yeah, everybody knows it. Vein mispil l'rabim ha'sh'omboli sh'ro oso. I can't tell you how many people said they saw it. U'mitzius b'chai kozeh u'dobah mafli sh'en l'daso hez b'klau. And he puts in his reservation. But I don't understand it. People said they saw it. But such an existence of a mouse coming from the earth, I don't understand it. But it is true, according to the science of the time. Therefore, the Chachamim commented on it. You present to me a shaila. What's the halacha for an tumor with a mouse that's half earth and half flesh, and I touch the earth part, do I become tumor or not? You have such a mouse? It's not a mouse? Whatever, it's an imagination. I'll answer an imaginary tshuvit for your imaginary question. The fact that the Chachamim have it mentioned doesn't mean they affirm that it's true. They know it's true. You look in Galen's bestiary, you'll see a picture of a mouse, half earth, half flesh. He drew the picture from where? From his mind. And even though the Rambam thinks very highly of Galen, he says, Galen not so much, but Hippocrates, he says, you can't argue with Hippocrates. Whatever he says is Torah's Hippocrates, and therefore you can't argue with it. Nevertheless, Rambam himself, in several places, disagrees with Hippocrates. The last one is a very next one is a very interesting finding, the one that the Chassidish Moalim violate the halacha regularly. They got a kabbalah, some kind of masorah, that if the bilirubin is higher than 12, you have to delay the bris. A bilirubin is a pigment in the blood that comes from the breakdown of blood cells. You ask a moel, what's Billy Rubin? He'll tell you, it's Chaim Rubin's brother. Right. Doesn't know Billy Rubin, Shmilly Rubin, doesn't know what it's all about. But as long as Billy Rubin, you have to be careful. Oh, here you have a study that shows Billy Rubin, Kadosh Baruch Hu, knows what he's doing. The liver doesn't begin to produce the enzyme that breaks down the Billy Rubin until the fifth day of birth. Why? Because when a baby begins to breathe oxygen, he produces what's called free radicals. Free radicals are the major cause of cell mutations, which leads to cancer. So Kadosh Baruch Hu went ahead and put in the blood a delay don't break down the bilirubin. I need it to catch the free radicals. And therefore, bilirubin is a healthy, life-saving pigment. If a little bit higher, the baby is healthier, not lower. And the average baby on day five, the bilirubin is at 13.5. And therefore, by day 7, it may be well yet above 12. You don't delay the bris. You thank Kodesh Baruch Hu for a healthy baby. And there we have then something I don't want to emphasize too strongly, but I cited you to balance from the Tzitz Eliezer. It's one of the greatest poskim of our generation concerning medical matters, and points out they had the slightest idea what medicine was all about. He paskin the way he took the Chachomim literally. And when asked whether you can determine paternity by examining the blood of the father and the blood of the son, he answered, you cannot do such a thing, because the Gemara says there are three partners in a child, in the birth of a child, right? Gimel Shutfim Ba'odam, right? A man contributes the white parts, the woman contributes the red parts, and Kodesh Baruch Hu contributes the neshama. If man contributes the white parts, how can you check anything? The blood? Blood is red. Therefore, he has nothing to do with the blood. And on that basis, he denied a request for a parental proof of parentage that could be determined by a blood analysis, and caused that the individual should continue to support two children who are clearly not his children. Inability to separate what Chazal said in broad concept, no meaning. Chazal didn't know whether the father contributes the white parts and the red parts. It's a way of saying there were three shutrim, or the three partners, three equal partners. But to say literally that it's only the white part and therefore no contact with the blood, of course not. Next one is again a personal thing I put in. I had the cover that I've been lecturing for the U.S. Navy as a so-called citizen ethicist, and we're out in Okinawa when this is a Navy paper that was printed daily paper for the Navy there, and they report that in South Korea, 4 times a year, a body of water 20 feet deep, a half a mile long, disappears, and the people rush in and pick up the clams and the lobsters, etc., etc. 4 times a year. Kriyas Yamsuf 4 times a year. So what's the miracle of Kriyas Yamsuf, which is our major miracle? The answer is, a miracle is when someone is chasing you with a knife to stick you, and you walk into the ocean, and the ocean opens up, and when he comes down after you, the ocean closes down. That's a miracle. The fact that it happened at a time when Kadosh Baruch Hu predestined that time, coincidence is miracle in halacha. We don't like miracles in halacha. For Kadosh Baruch Hu gave the laws of nature and gave the laws of Torah. Torah zeh lo teimuch lefes. The laws of Torah don't change. Laws of nature don't change either. The Chachamim speak of nishtana hateva. That nature has changed. Nature never changes. Nishtana yidiyas hateva. Our knowledge of nature changes. But nature remains constant. And therefore, there's wonderful medrash. Medrash says, Vayoshev hayom le'esono. The ocean returned to its strength. So medrash says, Al tikhi le'esono, elo litno'o horishon. To the original condition that God set for this ocean at this moment to split. And the miracle was, at that moment, the whole setup worked out, that Jews were entered, they were following, and they kept on following, even though the ocean was closing down on them. And then I have the last two, which was just about making. And that is from our Maseches Nida. In Maseches Nida, there are two strange halachas. One halacha says that a twin birth can exist with only one twin surviving. Yet, that other twin who disappeared leaves a remnant, and therefore in halacha it's relevant. If it was a boy or a girl, changes the laws of tumah,
And therefore, you have to worry about the twin that was not there. What kind of business are vanishing twins? So Rabbi Google provided the information. One of the Talmidim pushed the button, right, and showed that vanishing twins occur, last line, in one of every eight multi-fetal pregnancies. One in eight. And they some disappear. How they disappear, what? But it does so. And Chachomim knew about it, and Chachomim responded there with the halacha. And the last one there, can twins be born months apart? The world says, a man said, you should know that a twin can be born 3 months apart. And you want to prove it to you? Yehuda v'cheskiyah b'nei rabchiyah, right? Here, the two people sitting in the besmedlish, they're the sons of rabchiyah, they were born 3 months apart. A twin 3 months apart? I mean, a woman finally fetches out a baby, and then she says, what, she's not done yet? She has to start all over again. 3 months later, another baby coming out. Is that possible? Sure. So that's the next Rabbi Google's contribution, right? Can twins be born a month or two apart? Sure enough, right? And then the last one, the COVID Chumash class, which I give, the Tower of Babel. What kind of Tower of Babel nonsense? They built a Tower of Shemayim. What does that mean? So there was evidence from the Book of Jubilees, wherever that source of the book is, that it was a mile and a half high. So a mile and a half high, that's what they have to build with? Mud bricks. Imagine the weight on the lower bricks. If you go up a mile and a half high, we have no building that could stand. So MIT did a study, and it says in the Torah that they used bricks, and they baked it in an oven in a kiln, right? Sulfur levainer. And they showed that mud and straw bricks, baked in an oven, can withstand a tower 2.5 miles high, not a mile and a half high. What does it tell you? It tells you, be careful with that smirk. Be careful with that question, is it for real? I don't know. I know what's for real, what's not for real. Whatever my Rebbe taught me is for real, that's real. Whatever my Rebbe taught me is not for real, is not for real. That's how our Torah survived unto our generation. Thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi Tendler. This brings our shiur to an end, and we can proceed to the reception. Thank you. Thank you.